Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Finding someone on an online Catholic dating site shouldn't be like shopping for a blender. So why do most dating sites leave you feeling like you're shopping for a spouse? At Catholic Singles, we connect members through our unique user polls and activities, which help you discover other members and their personalities and interests. Because you're a person, not a profile picture. So stop shopping and start discerning. Trust your love story to the original Catholic dating site and use the promo code BREADBOX at checkout for 20% off at CatholicSingles.com.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Holo is here to help. Holo is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel to the rosary to daily examines, Holo has something for everyone. Holo is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.holo.app/breadbox.
Good morning, Philip.
Good morning, Ricardo.
So before we start, this Saturday is the Solemnity, the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary.
Yeah.
But it's not a holiday of obligation. So I wanted to ask the newly minted canonist if he knew why.
Yeah, so normally, of course, this is a holy day of obligation and solemnity. Those don't necessarily go together throughout the year, so a day that we'd come to Mass. So generally, I know when it falls on a Saturday, the obligation is lifted. And I think, I'm not clear if that's actually in the code itself that gives maybe the bishop's conference the ability.
I think it's a special indult for the U.S., I believe, but yeah. We would have to check that.
All right. Well, how about we look at the gospel?
Great. One of the greatest gospels that we read in the whole of the year, in my opinion.
All right.
Do you remember a couple of weeks ago when I told you that two of the gospels, Mark and Matthew, have two multiplications of bread?
Yes, right.
Of bread and fish.
Mm-hmm.
And this story that we read today, it's in the middle, like a hinge between these two stories.
Okay.
And that's why I think it's very interesting. We are reading from Matthew chapter 15, verses 21 to 28.
At that time, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a Canaanite woman of that district came and called out, "Have pity on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is tormented by a demon." But Jesus did not say a word in answer to her. Jesus' disciples came and asked him, "Send her away, for she keeps calling out after us." He said in reply, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But the woman came and did Jesus homage, saying, "Lord, help me." He said in reply, "It is not right to take the food of the children and throw it to the dogs." She said, "Please, Lord, for even the dogs eat the scraps that fall from the table of their masters." Then Jesus said to her in reply, "O woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish." And the woman's daughter was healed from that hour.
I've seen many attempts to parse this gospel and make it into something that I don't think it's accurate. So recently I read someone saying, "Have pity on me, Lord, Son of David." So that Jesus answers first as the Son of David, which is dismissing the woman, but then as the Lord, he actually heals the daughter, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's parsing. Here Jesus comes to a realization, thanks to the faith of the foreigner. It happens many times in the gospel that his mission was to go beyond the lost sheep of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But we somehow are uncomfortable with thinking that Jesus didn't know everything from the start and this was a perfect strategy from the beginning. I have no problem whatsoever Jesus is equal in everything to us except sin. This is not sin. This is changing your mind. This is expanding your mission, your mind, what you think you are, your purpose, what you are supposed to do. So I have no problem with this interpretation, and I don't need to parse it.
I think that's a really interesting observation. Tell me a little bit more. I just have going through my head now. Tell me a little bit more about the significance in your mind of this between the two multiplication.
So in the first one, there are 12 wicker baskets mm-hmm. left. In the second one, there are seven. 12 is the number of the tribes of Israel. Seven will be a significant number in the Acts of the Apostles, for instance. It's the number of the deacons. It's the number of the gifts of the Holy Spirit. It seems to be a special number. So something has changed in the way that Jesus sees his mission, and that's the in between this moving from 12 to 7. That's what we find in between these two stories, almost like a parallel. You cannot look at chapters and because chapters are a modern addition to the Gospels. Right. But if you follow the stories, it's like in Spanish, I think you say it a hinge. A door.
Right.
So imagine this story, the 12, the story of the seven, the two multiplications of bread and fish, and then in the middle, as a hinge, you find this story,
right.
Which is amazing. Jesus is in foreign territory. Someone comes to him saying, "Please help me." He says, "I'm sure you are none of my business. I wasn't sent to help people like you." But the faith of the woman makes him change his mind, and changing your mind is it should be more acceptable.
You're just at a brilliant point. I'd have got nothing more to
How
say.
How do we follow up from this, right?
So I want you to appreciate this moment. You've left me speechless. I think that's a very interesting, just a fascinating observation. And I think you're on to something there. I think about the word begging, though. And that's something that stands out to me in terms of we automatically go to something bad, like Jesus is demeaning her or something. And why is begging bad? You know, that's an action on her part, by the way. And I think about those times where we beg God for something, and you know, there's sort of a negative connotation to that. And I'm not sure it necessarily is. I don't know. I'd have to think a little bit more about sort of the significance of begging, but I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It's a plea for something one feels that they really need or are looking for.
There is a whole spirituality of begging, as you know, from the mendicant orders. Mm-hmm. At some point in the history of the church, one of the most difficult things that you could ask members of these religious communities was to beg, because begging is very difficult, asking for. So in the U.S., one of the things I realized when I first came to the U.S. is that even when you fundraise money, you always give something in exchange to kind of soften how difficult it is to ask people, to beg people. You
sure,
know?
Sure.
I always saw that all these dinners we do and fundraisers where or the cookie walks, where we get people to say, yes, give us money, but we'll give you something in exchange because we are so embarrassed to ask for money. I always joke that Jesus didn't say, help the poor and we'll give you a cookie. Yeah. Jesus said, help the poor, period, you know?
Right.
So, and begging became part of the mendicant orders that they were defined by this in contrast with the opulence of the Vatican at that time and of the diocesan priests who lived in some wealth.
Mm-hmm.
The mendicants made it a point to beg for money, to beg for what you were going to eat that day.
Right.
And then at some point they became as wealthy as anybody else. But that was the idea. There is a spirituality of begging that is very interesting. Not only money, a favor like he's asking here.
So forgive me, but I'm going to be a little negative here.
Sure.
But I think that there's something very sobering in this reading as well, which always stands out. So I think you've rightly pointed out there's something very beautiful here in which perhaps she allows Jesus to rethink exactly how he does his mission and expand his mm-hmm. mission in this really beautiful moment. But what happens early on in the gospel? What happens is the other disciples try to send her away. And it just, because I think it's a pesky problem that I don't think we're quite aware of. And this relates to, first of all, an online presence, but also our interpersonal presence in the world, but also our interpersonal presence in parishes. But how often are we sending people away from Jesus Christ? Are we sending people away from the church because of our behaviors, you know, because of our attitudes, because of our inability to treat people with a modicum of respect and openness? And it happens all the time. And I don't, again, I think it's so stubborn, and I continue to sort of struggle with this. And why do we keep sending people away who are searching, who are seeking, who are looking for something in life, perhaps Jesus Christ? And some of us who've been around for a long time, in our own ways, we send them away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the disciples here that try to send her away.
The disciples are first where Jesus is first. So Jesus then changes, and he will change his disciples with him. So you have to understand that the disciples are saying what Jesus says at the beginning. So you know what I'm trying to say here?
Yeah.
I believe as a pastor, you can relate to another story that I'm sure has happened to you. We've never talked about this, but when you decide to do something in your parish and you think you are doing the right thing and you do it after prayer, discernment, and you think it's the right thing to do, how many people will come and become like these disciples to remind you of what you are going to lose, of what you are going to, the mistake you are making, right? Mm-hmm. Father, if you sing more songs in Spanish, 10% of your parish will go to the neighboring parish because they don't want any Spanish in the songs. These things happen.
Right.
These things happen.
No, I think it's true. I engaged over the last couple of years at one of my parishes in a major capital appeal, but one of the consultants we are working with has worked with a lot of parishes, and he said, and he was exactly right. He said, Father, you're going to run into this. You're going to run into folks who are going to say, well, if you push forward on this project, which is ambitious, whatever it might be, you're going to lose, you know, a number of parishioners. Mm-hmm. But guess what? You're going to find over time you've gained hundreds new ones, mm-hmm. hundreds of new ones. And not quite those exact same numbers, but I found the same thing. You run up against something, and I don't think we quite appreciate all the new people now who have something different, something for them, hopefully, because we've kind of kept them in mind.
And you're referring to a capital project. Imagine a pastor trying to preach more about social justice or about race or about poverty. And people, oh, Father, you are really bothering us, or you are preaching politics too much. And, you know, it's an election year and we know about this and how people will say, oh, this is politics. And people will come and tell you, keep those problems away from us, you know.
I know, but it doesn't even have to be that significant. It's, you know, so...
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean? To say, hey, we want some new people here in the neighborhood to come into our parish, and we put these social barriers in the way to make it clear it's not their parish. It's it's those who have been here for 50 years, perhaps. And not all bad, but I think it is something to reflect on often.
Absolutely. Maybe the message in the background, we are a church that is called to be universal everywhere and of every issue and inclusive and everything. And I think that's a good reminder that Jesus opens up to that reality he encounters. The last thing I would like to say about this gospel, at least from my part, this happened to Jesus because he was in the right place.
Mm.
And for me, there is a theology of location. So the last thing I see in this gospel, in addition to an obvious call to inclusivity and to expand the universal message of the gospel, is that this happened to Jesus because he was in the right place,
mm-hmm.
and in a place where he could encounter this woman. If we keep ourselves always in safe places, and you know what I mean, places where there would be no interaction with anybody who needs us, then this kind of transformation will never happen to us or to our communities. I think there is something about the theology of location. We have to find ourselves in places where we can have these kinds of encounters.
I agree with you. I'd be just even to expand on that. I think there's a lot of thoughts and a lot of, I'm really interested in kind of a theology of location. Because on the other hand, I'd say too, we need to kind of consider the fact that we are in a particular place for a reason, you know, and this goes back to what, you know, I say often, don't wait for the perfect moment. I'd also say don't wait for the perfect opportunity to tell the good news of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Don't wait to find someone for whom it's comfortable to do so. Sometimes it's someone who's very close to us and it could be very different, but that's kind of the location that we're at. So it's both. I'm not saying I disagree with you. I think there's something important about where we are and where we're called to go to as well.
It's one of the tensions between the gospel and our historical reality today. Jesus was an itinerant preacher with disciples. Our parishes are well established physically and in specific places. So
sure.
How do we deal with that tension? And I believe tension is creative. It is thinking about it will give us great solutions.
Excellent.
Very good. I think we have enough for this week.
Sounds good. How about next week we'll get together again?
See you next week.
All right. Have a good day.
Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/breadboxmedia. Experience coffee like never before.